Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Tuesday, October 8th. I'm joined today by our guests, Eric and Kate. We're diving into a fascinating brain study, so let's get started. Today, we're discussing a unique brain study conducted by neurologist Ana Triana-Hoyos. She studied her own brain for 5 months to understand how external factors affect brain activity. Let's dive into the details. Eric, what were the key elements of this study?
Well, Ted, this study is pretty wild. Hoyos basically turned herself into a human lab rat for science. Twice a week, she'd plop down and watch the same 10-minute clip from the Grand Budapest Hotel. Talk about dedication. She also put her gray matter through its paces with mental exercises. But here's the kicker. She wasn't just studying her brain in isolation. Hoyos was tracking everything from her sleep patterns to her stress levels using smart gadgets. It's like she was trying to create a holistic brain diary.
That's right. But it's important to note that this was a single subject study, which has significant limitations in terms of generalizability.
Hold on, Kate. While I agree it's a single subject study, let's not dismiss it so quickly. The depth of data collected over 133 days, including 30 fMRI scans, provides valuable insights into how the brain changes over time. This isn't just a snapshot, it's a full-blown.
I disagree. A sample size of one can't possibly provide meaningful scientific conclusions. It's just anecdotal evidence at best. We need larger studies to draw any
interesting points from both of you. Kate, let's dive a bit deeper. What were the main findings of this study?
Well, Ted, the study found that external factors like sleep, exercise, stress, and mood influence brain activity, with effects lasting up to 15 days. But I can't stress enough how limited these findings are. It's like trying to understand the ocean by looking at a single drop of water.
That's correct, but let's not overlook the significance of this. It suggests our daily habits have a much longer-lasting impact on our brain function than previously thought. Imagine the implications for mental health.
But we can't assume this applies to everyone. Hoyos herself admitted that some findings might be specific to her brain. It's irresponsible to extrapolate these results.
While that's true, it doesn't negate the value of the study. It provides a framework for understanding brain plasticity and the importance of lifestyle factors. This could be a stepping stone to more.
I think you're overstating its importance. Without replication in a larger sample, these findings are speculative at best. We can't base scientific conclusions on one person.
Let's move on to the methodology. Eric, how did Hoyos ensure objectivity in her study?
Great question, Ted. Hoyos wasn't just winging it. She followed a strict methodology where she collected data but wasn't allowed to analyze it until the project concluded after 5 months. It's like she was building a time capsule of her brain and only opened it at the end. This helped maintain scientific integrity and prevented her from unconsciously influencing the results. It's a clever way to minimize bias in a self-study.
But she was still both the researcher and the subject, which introduces inherent bias. It's impossible to fully separate those roles. No matter how strict the methodology,
I disagree. Many groundbreaking studies in psychology and neuroscience have involved researchers studying themselves. It's a valid approach when done rigorously. Think of the insights we've gained from.
But those studies are typically followed up with larger scale research. This study stands alone, which limits its credibility. We can't base our understanding of the
brain. Let's put this study in historical context. Can you think of any similar self-experimentation studies in the past?
Absolutely, Ted. This study reminds me of the famous self-experimentation by Barry Marshall in the 1980s. He had the guts, pun intended, to drink a broth containing H. pylori bacteria to prove it caused stomach ulcers. Talk about putting your money where your mouth is. Marshall's bold move challenged the medical establishment and eventually won him a Nobel Prize. It's a prime example of how self-experimentation can lead to groundbreaking discoveries.
That's a completely different situation. Marshall's experiment had a clear hypothesis and led to a Nobel Prize. This brain study is far less focused.
I disagree. Both studies challenged conventional wisdom. Marshall showed ulcers were caused by bacteria, not stress. Hoyos is showing how external factors affect the brain long term. They're both pushing the boundaries.
But Marshall's findings were immediately testable and applicable. This brain study's results are vague and not easily replicated. We can't just have everyone hooking themselves.
The principle is the same. Self-experimentation can lead to valuable insights that guide future research. Hoyos's study could be the spark that ignites a whole new field.
Interesting comparison. Kate, can you think of any other historical examples of self-experimentation in science?
Well, there's the case of Werner Forssmann, who performed the first human cardiac catheterization on himself in 1929. But again, that had a clear medical application. He threaded a catheter into his own heart to prove it could be done safely. It was risky, but it led directly to a life-saving medical procedure. That's the kind of self-experimentation that has real impact.
Exactly, and Hoyos's study could have clear applications in understanding cognitive performance and mental health. Just as Forssmann's experiment revolutionized cardiology, this could transform
how
we approach.
Forssmann's experiment directly led to a crucial medical procedure. This brain study doesn't have such clear-cut applications. We're not going to start prescribing movie
watching as a... I disagree. Understanding how lifestyle factors affect brain function over time could revolutionize how we approach mental health and cognitive enhancement. It's not about prescribing movies. It's about understanding the long-term impact of our
But those
daily...
applications are purely speculative at this point. We can't draw such broad conclusions from a single subject study. It's irresponsible to suggest this is on par
Let's look to the future. How do you think this research might develop? Eric, what potential applications do you see?
I believe this could lead to personalized brain health strategies. Ted, imagine apps that predict your cognitive performance based on your sleep, exercise, and stress levels over the past 2 weeks. It's like having a crystal ball for your brain. We could optimize our lifestyles for peak mental performance. Think about it. You could know the best time to schedule that big presentation or when to tackle that tricky problem at work. It's not just about boosting productivity. It could be a game changer for mental health, too.
That's far-fetched. We're nowhere near that level of understanding or technology. This study doesn't provide nearly enough data for such applications. You're basically
I disagree. We already have smart devices tracking our health metrics. Combining that with brain imaging could revolutionize preventive mental health care. It's not science fiction. It's the logical next step. We're already using AI.
But that assumes everyone's brain responds the same way as Hoyos's. We have no evidence that's the case. You can't just extrapolate one person's brain data.
Interesting
to the entire...
point. Kate, how do you see this field of research progressing?
I think we'll see more traditional large-scale studies examining the long-term effects of lifestyle on brain function. This single-subject approach is too limited. We need robust, peer-reviewed research with diverse participants to draw any meaningful conclusions. That's how real science progresses. We can't base an entire field on one person's brain diary, no matter how detailed it is.
But those studies often miss the nuances that this kind of in-depth analysis can provide. We need both approaches. Large-scale studies give us the big picture, but detailed self-experiments
Large-scale studies
reveal...
can be designed to capture those nuances without the bias of self-experimentation. We have sophisticated methods to track individual variations.
I disagree. Self-experimentation allows for a level of detail and control that's impossible in large studies. It's a valuable complement to traditional research. Think of it as a pilot study that can
But it
guide...
shouldn't be presented as standalone research. It's at best a pilot study that needs follow-up with proper scientific rigor. We can't base clinical decisions or policy on...
Thank you both for this lively discussion. It's clear that while self-experimentation in neuroscience raises interesting possibilities, it also sparks debate about scientific methodology and the interpretation of results. As research in this field continues, it will be fascinating to see how these approaches evolve and what new insights they might bring to our understanding of the brain. That's all for today on Listen 2. Until next time, keep thinking critically and stay curious.